We're going to talk now about something that a lot of people experience, but many fewer talk about openly, the loss of a pregnancy.
I miscarried my first pregnancy, and that was now a long time ago, about 17 years ago. Before I had my two children, I was shocked. It was really distressing. And then when I started looking into it, I found that, in fact, miscarriages were very common. I had a first trimester miscarriage, and about 20% of confirmed pregnancies miscarry, usually in their early months.
That's Lara Friedenfeld, a historian of health, reproduction, and parenting, and the author of The Myth of the Perfect Pregnancy, A History of Miscarriage in America. Studies show that 1 in 4 women in the U.S. and the U.K. will experience a miscarriage. But as common as they are, many women have trouble finding the support they need to cope. But that might be starting to change. In recent months, public figures from Beyoncé Knowles to Alanis Morissette have been speaking out about pregnancy loss and how it's personally affected them. And that might be opening up more conversations about miscarriage and how it continues to be difficult to talk about and therefore difficult to find help dealing with. I asked Lara Friedenfeld to talk us through all of this, including her own miscarriage experience.
Part of what was really shocking was that I was about to receive my PhD in the history of science. I had written this dissertation that would become my book, The Modern Period, Menstruation in 20th Century America. If anyone should have known this statistic and understood what might happen, it was me. And somehow I had missed that information, and I feel like actually it was fairly hidden. It's not a matter of that you're in poor health or that you've done something wrong. Most miscarriages actually happen because of chromosomal problems with the embryo. And so they can happen to anyone. And I wish the doctor had said to me, just so you know, you may get pregnant next month. It may take 6 months. You may have a great, easy pregnancy the first time, or it may not stick the first time. But that's okay. That's all within the range of healthy women's childbearing. It's unfortunately how it goes, but I think everything looks great and I wish you well. If someone had said it that way to me, I think I would have gone in with a different expectation and it would have really helped me make peace quickly with the situation.
At what point during a pregnancy is a miscarriage most likely to occur?
They're more likely the earlier you are in the pregnancy. So one way to not have the experience, in fact, is to just wait to take that pregnancy test. So if you test the earliest the pregnancy test manufacturers tell you you can, which is almost a week before you've missed your period, if you test then and you get the faintest glimmers of the human chorionic gonadotropin that you're measuring with that test, you have a 30% chance of miscarrying. That test is not telling you what people feel like it should tell them, which is that I have a baby on the way in 9 months. It's telling you you have a 70% chance of a baby on the way in 9 months. So what I tell women is you might feel better just waiting to take that test because a bunch of the losses you won't even know you had if you didn't take the test.
And I guess for many people, when they're having a miscarriage, it may be at home or in some other place. They're not necessarily having under care of a medical professional, correct?
Yes. So part of the important thing to understand about miscarriage is that the experience can be very different depending on what stage of the pregnancy you have the miscarriage. So like I was saying, in the first few weeks, you may not even be able to tell the difference between a miscarriage and a late menstrual period, especially if you get crampy periods. Menstrual cramps are related to childbirth pain, and there's a whole continuum there. Whereas if you had even a first trimester loss, if it's at the very end of the first trimester, you may have almost the experience of a mini childbirth. It can be really painful and difficult and scary.
Typically, what happens for someone in that situation in terms of getting the kind of care or counseling that they may need?
I think many women, if they start to bleed, will seek medical care. May end up at the emergency room or with their obstetrician. And the care that women receive these days is, I would say, hit or miss. It depends on the hospital and it depends on the practitioner. Some practitioners are very compassionate about it, can explain well what's going on. I think a really good practitioner will tell a woman what to expect. Often they do send women home and tell them to come back if they have alarming symptoms, but that they may be more comfortable and safer miscarrying in the comfort of their own home. We're still trying to figure out how to give women the emotional support they need in any birth situation, including if they end up having a miscarriage.
So it's very common, and yet you have all these studies which continue to show that women say they have a hard time talking about the miscarriage to even closest friends. Why is that?
I think it can be really risky to talk about miscarriage. So we know that despite the laws we have against discrimination against pregnant women and mothers, that we face those issues at work. So it can feel risky to talk about miscarriage with anyone who might affect our employment. It can feel risky because actually women have a range of responses to miscarrying. So some women feel profound distress, feel almost like they've lost a child, even if it's a very early loss, while others feel that it's a lost opportunity, a disappointment, and they're eager to try again. And those are really different emotional reactions. And even very well-meaning friends and family members may assume one or the other and just say the wrong thing.
Is there anything that can be done prior to someone becoming pregnant that would conceivably reduce their trauma from potentially experiencing a miscarriage?
I think so. So as a historian, what I see is that our contemporary childbearing culture does a lot to aggravate the problem. So what I see is that, first of all, we believe, as you said earlier, that we have way more control than we actually do over our fertility and over being able to stay pregnant, over how much the things that we do to care for our pregnancies actually can make a difference. By the time we had the birth control pill, boy, we felt like we had it all under control. And in many ways, we did in terms of preventing pregnancy, but that can make you feel overconfident that you have control when you do want to be pregnant. We've had wonderful medical care develop. By the 1950s, we could be much more confident in the safety of our pregnancies. And we also developed a culture of maternity care where women were told that if they would just do the right things, they would have safe and healthy pregnancies. And women were told this even by practitioners who knew that this was not true about early pregnancy loss. But there was still a feeling that it helped to say reassuring things and that maybe we would get there. And we haven't been totally honest with women in the things we've told them about their prenatal care all the way from the 1920s till today for 100 years. We have a culture that I think can be very positive in many ways about how we think about parenting. Our pregnancy advice, which already was over-promising, I think, is increasingly brought to us by marketers. Mm-hmm. And they're not trying to sell us healthy pregnancies. They're trying to sell us stuff for our pregnancies, for our children, for all the different life choices we're going to make now that we have children. It's not just the baby clothes. It's also the minivan, the life insurance policy. And with that advice, with our pregnancy advice coming via those marketers, their incentive is to get us excited about our pregnancies and bonded with our pregnancies, because that's what's going to induce us to start buying their things and attaching to their brands first before someone else gets to you as the pregnant customer. And I think recognizing just how much marketing is framing the pregnancy advice, the marketing is framing what we learn about embryos when, if we download an app, we get our daily update, this is your baby on day 56. If it's a marketing mechanism to get you to log in daily for that picture, then the way that they're telling you about your pregnancy may or may not be objective or in your best interest.
Laura Friedenfels is a PhD historian of health, reproduction, and parenting, and the author of The Myth of the Perfect Pregnancy, A History of Miscarriage in America. Laura, thanks for joining me.
Thank you so much.
We asked you to share your stories of miscarriage, and so many of you weighed in.
This is Lorna Lynn calling from Wynwood, Pennsylvania, outside of Philadelphia. I had a miscarriage at age 39 when my husband and I deeply wanted a second child to join our four-year-old daughter. It was emotionally devastating. The best support I got was from my mother, who had had two miscarriages herself. Well, I was only about 8 to 10 weeks along in that pregnancy. I already loved the baby and was so sad to lose that child. Friends and family who had not experienced a similar loss were not helpful. They didn't seem capable of understanding that this was a real, profound loss of someone I had begun to love and wanted to welcome.
This is Karen from Cherry Hill. Having a miscarriage, several actually, was one of the most isolating experiences of my life. Even though almost everyone I know has had one, people seem to say the most horrendous things. It was God's plan. You can have another. It could have been worse. It feels like no one, not even your husband, can possibly understand your pain, even though probably most people can empathize.
My name is Vinca Valdivia. I'm calling from San Diego, California. And this is a touchy subject. My sister had a miscarriage right around the time that we were both pregnant together. I'm sure it was especially sad for her because we had planned on raising our kids at around the same age and having them grow up together. Although we never really talked about it afterwards, it couldn't have been easy for her to watch my pregnancy grow as she had lost her child.
My name is Lindsay from Florida. I miscarried an unplanned pregnancy when I was 28 years old. Even though I had planned to terminate the pregnancy at my local Planned Parenthood, I still was really troubled by this feeling that something was wrong with my body, that it was malfunctioning in some way at an age where I was supposed to be super healthy.
It's Leanne from Pacific Palisades. I've held space with girlfriends and significant others in the wake of miscarriages and even an early delivery that led to mortality of two twins. The best you can do is just be with them, support them, look around and see how you might help them practically, like tidying or cooking or getting their mail. And you really have to wait for their words and just show them affection until they're ready to talk.
My name's Nicole, calling from Columbia, South Carolina. I've had two miscarriages in the past few years, which I decided to be pretty open about. And I was really surprised and encouraged by how many women shared that same experience and were so willing to offer support and understanding.
Thanks so much to all of you who told us your stories. If you do want to share your experience, we're at 877-8-MY-TAKE.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.